Joining us on the summit today is Sayer G, founder and leader of GreenMedInfo.com. Sayer, welcome to the summit.
Thanks a lot for having me, Josh.
It is amazing just to be having this conversation with you because over the past year, we've been beginning to collaborate, and this summit is, most of our viewers will know, is a collaborative effort, a partnership between you and I. So it's just an honor to work with you, and I'm really stoked just to be able to have this conversation and open it up to our audience today.
Same here, Josh. You're the one who brought to my awareness just how big an issue Wi-Fi is in 5G. So after meeting you, I sort of went down a rabbit hole and come out through the other side. And now I'm so excited to be able to share with everyone that we know what the real problems are and solutions.
Excellent. So I'm going to share with our audience a little bit about your background, and then we'll dive in. Sayer G is the founder of GreenMedInfo.com, the internet's leading resource on the published science for natural healing. As an author, activist, speaker, and widely recognized thought leader, Sayer helps to empower people with science-based solutions in the natural health and wellness space. He is also a reviewer at the International Journal of Human Nutrition and Functional Medicine, board member at the National Health Federation, and steering committee member of the Global Non-GMO Foundation. So that's a lot. You're really involved in creating change here on the planet. And so with GreenMedInfo.com now reaching millions of people, can you just tell us about how, you know, you got to this space and what first got you started and what your mission is with GreenMedInfo today?
Sure, Josh. So for me, I think what really brought me into the sort of health activist space was sort of a lifelong awareness that, first of all, my own health journey led me to experience allopathic medicine in a way that was really traumatic because I was diagnosed at 6 months of age with bronchial asthma. And, you know, with the interventions available at the time, including injecting me with adrenaline and not looking at the root cause, which in my case was probably over vaccination early in life, as well as cow's milk in my formula, it brought me to the point in my, you know, 20s, basically, where I realized, wow, I don't need to be on these meds. I can use nutrition to heal myself. And just how, on some level, upsetting it was that no one in my, you know, two decades of struggles with health had told me or my parents, like, hey, there's a problem that can be solved very easily if I just had the right information. So it was only later in life, actually, when I had my first child, that I started to be faced with what a lot of new parents have to go through, which is the gauntlet of, you know, should I abide by the conventional health recommendations, vaccination being the most in a way challenging decision that's faced today by parents. So GreenMedInfo evolved out of some basic life experiences and also needing to collate the science, basically supporting what I knew in my body and my heart and my experience was true, but knowing that in this day and age, without science, peer-reviewed science, for example, the powers that be will pretty much be able to drive forward their agenda without, you know, any real friction. So that's where we are today. You know, GreenMedInfo serves the public with information on a variety of topics, but those that are most compelling are informed consent related issues, which vaccines, genetic modification, for example, and radiation exposure are top on the list. It's only after meeting you, though, that I was really made aware that of all the things happening today that risk the health of our children primarily, I think that radio toxicity from ubiquitous Wi-Fi exposure and now the threat of 5G is really top on the list.
Yeah. Wow. And so your work extends beyond even the online realm and with an involvement in grassroots activism. Can you give us some examples of things you've been involved with?
Yeah. So for me, early on, before the rise of social media, you know, I was just basically like a lot of folks who became aware of the problems that were in front of us. So for me, again, being faced with a vaccine schedule that would require my children receive things like hepatitis B vaccine at day one, which is arguably only appropriate, if that, for intravenous drug users and those who have unprotected sex with multiple partners. No infant falls within that category. So when I started to understand that the agenda was so blatantly non-science-based, and looked at the research that existed, you know, ostensibly to support the CDC's vaccination schedule, I was shocked, you know, via the Cochrane collaboration reviews on the topic, that there really wasn't an adequate evidence to support the schedule. So when I went down that rabbit hole, you know, I came out the other side thanks to social media with a platform that, you know, today does, you know, offer about 1 million visitors access to the information that I've gathered. But it's really because of the internet, it's because of free events like this, it's because of social media that we have a type of democracy that certainly wasn't available before. And so that's really what led me to, you know, create Greenman Info. And to me, it's a grassroots platform because it's user supported. You know, we don't accept advertising on the website. And it's just, you know, people like you and I who want to have information on underreported adverse effects of common medical interventions and or, you know, technologies like genetic modification, which, you know, the mainstream media presents as if it's safe.
Yeah. We'll talk about a little bit later your experience and knowledge and some of it firsthand with censorship, with propaganda, some of the propaganda now we're seeing directly related to 5G. So we'll get into that later. I also want to get into informed consent later with you. It's a very powerful topic. So your book, Regenerate, really is like a world-bridging book, right? I mean, it gets into several different key topics to really help empower people. Can you give us some keys, like a sneak peek of keys from the book?
Yeah, well, one of the topics that I stumbled upon after many years of looking at the literature on the topic of the new biology, if you will, where you see this interface between, you know, insights from quantum physics and then the new biology, is that the body is infinitely resilient. That there is, for example, an ancient germline within all life on the planet. In fact, from, you know, vegetable, fungal, animal, there's always going to be stem cells that are from the germline that actually can be tracked back to 3.4 billion years ago, to what they call the last universal common ancestor. And so, to me, to visualize these cells that are still constantly repairing damaged tissue within our body 24/7 for the rest of our life, as coming from really an infinite number of replications going back to billions of years, it shows you that we are an extremely resilient entity on a level that many of us have never been exposed to, because we're all meant to be, you know, believe that we are genetically, you know, defective and weak, and we need, you know, all of these external allopathic interventions and patented chemicals just to stay alive. So in this research project, I was shocked to find, for example, that the mitochondria within our cells have within them an electrical field strength within the inner mitochondrial membrane of 30 million volts. And that, yeah, so, you know, how do we account for that substrate energy? There's so much talk of almost a Newtonian sort of biophysical description of the Krebs cycle and ATP and the billiard ball-like, you know, sort of geometry of what we visualize the, you know, microbiology to be. But when it comes down to it, we're electromagnetic fundamentally in a way that speaks to what I think some of the key insights of quantum mechanics show, which is that there is a near infinite amount of energy, potentially information available at any point in space-time, and that our body cells access that energy, which is why, you know, if you were to try to calculate the total amount of, you know, energy within the body, it's practically infinite. So when you're dealing with electromagnetic technologies like Wi-Fi and 5G, there's a lot of evidence that's accumulated showing that radiotoxicity of our cells is a really big issue. So when I started to go down the rabbit hole of what makes us tick fundamentally, it also brought up a lot of red flags as far as the dangers of things like, again, Wi-Fi and 5G technologies.
So you mentioned, was it 3 million volts. What's the voltage? And explain that to us, because when I hear that, that's like the idea of, okay, is every cell getting electrocuted all the time? Like, help us to contextualize that.
Yeah, it's 30 million volts is the electric field strength, or the potential energy.
Potential energy.
Yeah, okay. Within a single mitochondria. Mitochondrion, and then you have what is it, up to 4,000 or 5,000 of those per neuron, for example, and you have billions of neurons. So if you do the math, that's pretty much a near infinite amount of energy available within our bodies. And so, you know, many of us still think about the body in terms of it being this glucose burning, you know, machine, right? It's like burning calories, like within a, you know, calorimeter. It's very primitive, the view we hold. So when we start going deep into what a mitochondria is, mitochondrion is, then we find that even the way the ATP magnesium stacks helically, it looks sort of like a cyclotron and obeys similar properties, which is basically a particle accelerator. So the interesting thing about the body is we're just starting to scratch the surface of understanding it. But what I am understanding about the body is it's primarily electromagnetism that drives the biochemistry. And so then when you're dealing with things like, you know, electromagnetic radiation from these devices, it's directly, you know, interfering with the health of our cells.
Wow. So it's cutting, you could say it like it's cutting the potential energy that we're able to tap into, that our mitochondria are able to tap into, that to express more fully. So it's dampening that expression of life force, or our connection to life force itself, through our mitochondria.
Yes, or altering the electromagnetism. One of the ways that it does that is that, you know, when it comes to the higher frequencies that are used in 5G, those frequencies are absorbed by water, you know, and so our body is 99% water by number of molecules. And so when you see 5G exposure, say in the skin, and you look at what you're actually finding within skin and within all biomolecules, is that there's a hydration shell, there's water around the biomolecule, and that radiation is being absorbed by the water. The water is actually, in the case of very basic functions like protein folding, the water is what shifts before the protein folds. So water and the connection with how these electromagnetic wavelengths are affecting the body is a big deal.
Wow, this is such a huge like topic and revelation, and I just see this, you know, really helping people connect the dots and going deeper on understanding causation and really how we work. Really quickly, was George Lucas trying to tell us something about mitochondria when he coined midichlorians and aligned it with the Force?
That's interesting. Perhaps. I never thought of it that way.
More seriously, though, before we move on, I mean, there's something here that I want to get your thought on. Several scientists, well-researched, such as Dr. Martin Paul, who explains causation, and other scientists who look at the studies about wireless and health harm, specifically DNA damage, see that in these studies, many of them are rat studies, for example, there comes a point where there's a certain amount of exposure where it can't go back to homeostasis, where there's a genetic mutation, there's the DNA breakage in which it's beyond the point of resiliency. You talk about resiliency in your book. Is this something, are humans different than rats, perhaps, from your regard, and do humans have an essence that makes them more resilient than, for example, we're seeing in these rat studies themselves?
I think those are good questions. I can say that in my own investigation post Fukushima fallout on low dose radioisotope exposure, as well as looking at medical diagnostic radiation, like the type used in X-ray mammography, is that there's a phenomenon known as xenohormesis, where technically small amounts of radiation can have very large effects. Now, some argue that some of those effects are beneficial, that they can generate even greater resilience in an organism. But there's the other side of it, which is that the lower the dose of radiation, the more toxic it is to the cell in certain ways. So, for example, if you have a low dose radiation exposure, which is a lot of what the industry, I think, focuses on when they try to minimize the harms of radiation exposure, you may see a lot of DNA changes. There'd be minor modifications or DNA adducts or changes in the DNA structure versus major ones where the cell dies. So in the case of a cell dying, that's quote good, because then the cell is damaged beyond repair and it's not gonna go cancerous. So low dose radiation can actually result in higher likelihood for a cancer phenotype shift. So in other words, it's possible that having low radiation exposure may be more carcinogenic than higher in certain instances. So the radiation risk models that are applied, therefore, to things like 5G are not really adequate because of sort of the non-linear dose responses that you can see in actual biological systems. Now, whether animals like rats are less or more susceptible than humans, that's a question that's been debated for decades. My assumption, however, is that when it comes to mammals generally, that there is definitely a lot of overlap, and one can't ethically construct human safety studies in the way that one would need, which would require decades actually of exposure time to determine what the actual adverse health outcomes are. So in the meantime, if we see any indication in a cell, bacteria, you know, animal model that there could be harm, then that's what they call the precautionary principle, which is not generally employed by regulators, which is if there's any evidence of risk, then the manufacturer should have to do safety studies at the highest level in order to prove that that consumer product safe before it's rolled out. So that's one reason why in the case of 5G, there's absolutely no justification for it to be on the market in the way that they're actually rolling it out now.
Yeah, and you mentioned long-term studies. I'll just share with you and the viewers that in a private conversation with Dr. Ronald Melnick, who designed the $30 million NTP, National Toxicology Program study on wireless, he told me that it's possible the latency period, carcinogenic latency period for wireless exposure and cancer and potentially other, symptoms could be up to 40 years. So it's crazy. I mean that all this is being done. So how did you first become aware of the harms and the science related to electromagnetic radiation?
Well, actually, to speak to the anecdote is that, you know, I saw your documentary Take Back Your Power, and that was my first real exposure to just how great a problem EMF exposure is. And I was looking at it first through smart meters, but then of course the topic of dirty electricity comes up, and then even really basic exposures to the Wi-Fi unit in my house as well as smart devices brought this topic, you know, to the fore in such a way that I couldn't deny that I myself had probably been exposed in a really bad way for years. So for me, it was actually your documentary that opened my eyes first to the topic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I want to share with our audience, just that we'll cut to a clip of that previously unreleased footage that you and I did in person of your Apple Watch, right? So let's look at that.
All right, Josh. So here's my iPhone Watch. It was given to me, and I kind of vowed I would never use it because of my concerns about EMF. But now I'm so into running that I can appreciate the metrics it provides, like VO2 max, etc.
Yeah.
And of course, my building statements. So I wanted to know if this gives off any EMF, because if it does, then certainly I need to be aware of that, and I may not use it any longer.
That's a really good question. I've actually never tested one of these, but in my right hand, I have two meters here. The right hand is the Cornet Electrosmog meter. It's the older version. The newer version, it's on its way to me, and it's actually new features, which are amazing. So on the right-hand side, you see the numbers that are 0.04. Mm-hmm. And if we put it, see if we can put it like right on the device, because to see how close it is to your actual skin. And if you get right, because it touches your skin, the numbers are going to be even higher than what we see on this device.
Let me actually open the app too, because there's a running app that I use to kind of assess my performance, and I wonder if when it's on, it might actually make the EMF worse. Let's see, I just hit open my goal. Here we go. Sorry. Ready. Right. Oh, 2.8.
Okay. So 3.1. So basically, what that means, Sayer, in relative terms, is the building biology guideline for extreme concern is 1.0 on this meter.
Wow.
The FCC guidelines are not based on science, so their standards are much higher.
Yes.
But the building biology ones, which are aligned with a whole body of thousands of studies, are the ones that you want to look at.
Oh, my Lord. See, I purposely bought this thing because it didn't have cell phone capability, thinking that was going to help me.
Right.
But the Wi-Fi function is that powerful.
It is, and it's hard for people just to inherently, you know, understand this without seeing it on a device like this, because we don't, it doesn't, the wireless radiation doesn't interface with our sensory senses.
Yes, it's just like what gamma radiation or something you wouldn't feel or see, smell, taste, so you just don't think about it.
Yeah, this video was somewhat of a embarrassing example of how even someone like myself, who spent, you know, arguably a decade advocating strongly for reduction of exposure to harmful technologies, didn't even realize that I was exposing myself at that level. It was only through the use of an objective diagnostic technology like the Cornet meter that I was able to see, wow, this is really having a significant adverse effect. I was actually using that device, you know, in a way, thinking Wi-Fi was better, you know, that Wi-Fi would be better than a cell phone hooked up version. So I opted out of that, and it turns out that I was very wrong about that.
Yeah. And then in addition to that, I remember last year there was also a significant moment that you and I had when you came across this video testimony of Canadian journalist Rodney Palmer talking with the Simcoe County School Board in Ontario about wireless, you know, the effects and even deaths, like cardiac deaths, right? Do you want to say a word about that and how that kind of affected you? And because you posted it on your site on Green Med Info, and there was a big response to it.
That was huge for me because, you know, I wasn't fully aware until this window where I was exposed to your work that the 2.4 gigahertz or 2.45 gigahertz ranges that they use for these Bluetooth devices and Wi-Fi are the same range as microwave ovens. You know, it's what we cook flesh with and other things in those devices. So, you know, when I started to make that connection, you know, we are basically, carnal being. We have carcasses and we don't want to be cooked by these wavelengths either. I started to realize, wow, this is tragic. Do you know how many tens of thousands of schools have these Wi-Fi units set up? And that these children who are exceptionally, exquisitely sensitive to radiotoxicity are potentially being cooked all day, you know, in their classrooms. And it was outrageous to me that I was not fully aware of the issue until then. And Rodney's testimony was really deeply disturbing, because it appears that there were children in this school that just dropped dead of these, quote, anomalous cardiac issues after they installed these powerful Wi-Fi stations.
My name is Rodney Palmer. I worked as a journalist in Canada for 20 years. I was an investigative reporter for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and I was a foreign correspondent for CTV News based in India and China and the Middle East. My job on a daily basis was to determine fact from fiction, to understand who's telling the truth and who's trying to manipulate it. When my children were both coming home from school with red faces and red ears, weak and limp and agitated, we wondered what could be causing it. We spent a year trying to zero in on allergies. We did allergy tests, we withheld foods, we introduced them, reintroduced them, but there were no solid answers there. And we went right to the source like a journalist would. We asked the mothers if their kids were healthy, and we got a consistent answer from about half of them. For 18 months, they'd been in and out of doctor's offices with a range of neurological symptoms. By coincidence, it was 18 months when the school installed the Wi-Fi. And we found out that at least four children had developed erratic tachycardia that confounded their doctors, and they were wearing heart monitors to school. The older children, who were a little more aware of their bodies, told us they had blackouts in certain areas of the school. One even said he couldn't hold a pencil inside the school. And these were all symptoms that occurred daily at school and disappeared on weekends and holidays.
It feels like my head is like there's a lot of pressure in my head, and it's like repulsing like this.
I've been getting a lot of headaches, and it's been making me really dizzy.
I get really like weak, and like I can't, it's hard to hold a pencil too, and I can't think straight.
It feels like I can't concentrate, and you feel like you're not really there. It's hard to explain.
We found out that the school board had installed a wireless internet system powerful enough to run 300 computers at once, and they thought it was awesome. There are only 7 computers in this school using this system. The parents of the affected children offered to pay for hardwired connections so the kids could feel healthy at school again. But the Simcoe County District School Board said no. They said the children must be exposed to Wi-Fi at school. Even the children who were sick and presented to the school board themselves were told no. May not plug your computer into the wall. You must sit all day in a sea of microwave radiation.
Simply carcinogenic.
It puts it in the company of several other kinds of things, like lead, as well as engine exhaust and chloroform.
We wrote to the school board officials, public health officials, cabinet ministers. We did all the due process that you're supposed to do, and they all responded with the same cut and pasted answer. Safety code 6 says we're wrong. Are no health effects. 2 children have dropped dead in Simcoe County schools since the Wi-Fi was installed. Their hearts simply stopped beating. One was named Jim. One was a little boy named Chase.
So, you know, that one testimony actually led me to take my children out of a conventional school and put them in a Waldorf school, which is, you know, very, very against technology generally, because they feel it affects the, you know, spiritual, emotional, psychic development of children adversely. But it was also, for me, became almost like a medical necessity that they not be exposed to those wavelengths.
Yeah. And it's interesting how a lot of the higher you go in the world of, you know, corporate technology companies, a lot of the leaders don't expose their own children to technology until a later age. So they're more aware of the effects, right?
That's exactly it. And that's arguably what happens with vaccination as well, is that many of those who are advocating publicly for full vaccine compliance are themselves doing a reduced or non-vaccine program for their own children.
So we are seeing evidence that within these industries, there are people in positions of leadership and you could say power that are waking up and realizing the harm that they're doing. A lot of your work has called out, you know, especially the pharmaceutical industry, right, for its corrupt practices, hooking people onto drugs that are either not necessary or have horrendous side effects, and there's better natural solutions which you're bringing to the world. Do you see evidence within the telecom industry with regards to wireless and 5G that there are, you know, people, engineers, executives who are waking up and realizing the risk of 5G?
Yeah, I think that what we're seeing in mainstream reports now are those very platforms that are funded by this $1 trillion industry who are now waking up and making mention of the unintended adverse effects, you know, from Wire to even Engineer. Magazines are now starting to speak up on the science or, you know, lack of science demonstrating safety.
Yeah. There's one in particular that I'll just share about on that. The EDN article from April 2019, very powerful example of an engineer who was skeptical and looked at the science. In particular, 3 studies that were published by an EH Trust. And this is what he said. He said, he concluded with this quote, "There could very well be negative impacts from electromagnetic radiation. There's enough evidence to show a causal link could exist. 1 millimeter wave frequencies conduct the interior conduct to the interior of the body through the sweat glands, which a study showed very strongly, and which refutes the industry claim that it's just staying on the surface. Two, bacteria and cells are affected by millimeter wave frequencies. This is we're talking about the microbiome, mm-hmm. right? So if it's conducted into the interior and bacteria and base, you know, fundamental cells are affected, including one study actually showed how they morph from one form to another from millimeter wave frequencies. And three, DNA damage is a precursor to cancer. So this is just one example. I mean, there's like Wired Magazine, Newsweek, Chicago Tribune, London Telegraph, all of these. Like you say, I just wanted to follow that up and say, from my perspective, that's very much the case, is that this is becoming a hotly debated subject, even within industry. And I think that's the reason why they don't want to do a study, right? What's your thoughts on that? Industry is just admitting in a Senate hearing, in a federal Senate hearing, they're not doing any studies, they don't plan to do any studies, and they're just pushing it against people's consent, without any science.
Yeah, I mean, in this day and age, it's like research is sort of like an excreta of industry, you know, because of publication bias, where, you know, if a study is conducted, there is an ethical obligation to publish, but a null finding or negative finding, they don't legally have to publish. So they could do 20, 30 studies. And if they find one study that indicates the safety or effectiveness of some intervention or technology, they'll just selectively publish that one. And that's unfortunately how research works. So when you think about the sort of meme of evidence-based medicine or technology, it's really more of a political strategy than it is a reflection of the truth.
So industry can legally do 20 or 30 studies and only release the one that's most in their favor.
Yeah, that's the one that they might have some special relationship with a peer-reviewed journal, and they will end up publishing it. But the ones that fall flat or show harm, they won't publish.
Wow. It's no wonder that the Lancet editor-in-chief basically said you can't really trust, you know, a lot of these studies coming out these days, right?
Exactly. And I mean, in the realm of activism around science, and if you look at vaccine science, which is often oxymoronic, you'll find that they don't even use basic criteria such as a placebo-controlled trial for any vaccine presently in the schedule. They've never done combination vaccine studies, and yet from the top of the top, you know, all the way to the WHO or CDC, the claim is that unilaterally, unequivocally, vaccines are safe and effective without any reference to the research. So you call that science by proclamation or eminence-based science, not evidence-based. And that's exactly what seems to be happening in the realm of 5G.
So my understanding is that you have received, with regards to 5G satellites, you received a briefing prepared by certain researchers and people in the know, with some very significant facts and truth on that. Could you share that just with us today? Because a lot of that hasn't been released yet.
Yeah, this is really big news, and I'm happy to share what I've been appraised of. In fact, I was even doing further confirmation this morning, and you know, there are a bunch of meteorologists who are up in arms because the launch of these satellites, which I'll describe in a minute, are actually affecting the ability for them to predict water, because around 24 gigahertz, this is where the 5G range starts, is what water vapor emits. And so when they put these satellites up, it will actually interfere with our ability to track and predict weather, which could affect the lives and property and health of millions of people. So here's what everyone should know, because when I found out about this, I was just shocked. But they are going to be creating a global 5G satellite grid around the Earth. Okay, so it started in March 2018 when the FCC gave approval for Elon Musk's company SpaceX to launch an unprecedented 4,425 satellites into low orbit around the Earth. Would bring internet and 5G everywhere on the planet, right? So it's billed as a humanitarian venture. And eventually the satellite count will go to 12,000. But in order to get this operative, it's going to be less than 1,000 satellites that are going to be necessary. So they've already managed to get 60 up in May 2019. SpaceX launched its first 60 Starlink satellites, and they're going to carry out about six more launches this year, each with 60 satellites. So actually, when they reach 420, that's the number they need to begin providing global 5G service to SpaceX customers.
420.
Yeah.
And their plan is 12,000. Is that right?
Yeah, 12,000. So in fact, by 2020 is the goal to launch the 12,000 into space. And SpaceX's license from the FCC permits each satellite to emit an effective radiated power of up to 5 million watts. So it's just going to be blanketing the surface of our planet with this radiation. In April 2019, Amazon announced its plan to launch its own fleet of more than 3,000 5G satellites. And then that's going to total almost 20,000 satellites in low orbit around Earth. And so we know, too, that the radiation is basically going to affect every form of life on the surface of the Earth, because it's just going to be bathing it. And also, the location of the satellites is in low orbit in the ionosphere, which is an integral part of the global circuit that animates all living things. So even few hundred satellites using this bandwidth is expected to pollute the global electrical circuit with toxic, dirty electricity. So, you know, this is basically being rolled out, and it will affect every single person on the planet as well as every living thing on the planet.
And this isn't some theory. I mean, this is like FCC has approved. They're already launching. These plans are stated like publicly and openly. I mean, this is such a key aspect of. I'm so glad you received this information. You're sharing it because it needed to be included in the summit. This is such a key aspect of it. I mean, and you combine this with talks that we did in the summit with like Patrick Wood of Technocracy News and James Corbett and others who talk about the surveillance, the total surveillance and control aspect of the Internet of Things. These satellites is in addition to the terrestrial, you know, small cell sites that we hear about every few homes. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're going for total control, microwaving and surveilling and controlling everything. And then the power that would give them, like, what's your thoughts about this?
Well, that's the thing, Josh, is that before I met you and became aware of this threat, I mean, I was convinced that the greatest threat that I faced and my family faced and Americans face is being potentially penetrated against our will by medical interventions like vaccination, and in some cases, things like pediatric chemotherapy are now court ordered, or you can lose your children if you don't comply. And I started to think about it, okay, why am I so upset about that prospect? Well, because it's literally the state taking possession of your body, redefining it as chattel, right? As well as the fact that, you know, it's a form of rape, basically. It's penetrating you and your children against your consent without informed consent, because the true risks are hidden. So when you brought to my awareness 5G, it made it so clear that this is extremely penetrative and radiotoxic intervention, if you will, that affects our children more than any other category, because, see, the fast-growing child, the cells are replicating more quickly. Every time there's a mitosis event, the chromosomes become very susceptible to genotoxic agents, so radiotoxicity being top of the list. So then our children are being assaulted, unfortunately, by this technology disproportionately. So then, you know, anyone out there who has children already is pretty attuned to what that means, but it's rather outrageous, you know, that this is being rolled out in this way. So you're getting penetrated by radiotoxic wavelengths, and then it's also surveillance technology, because it's able to penetrate things like drywall and buildings in a way that the older technology could not. as well as, you know, it's surveilling. And then there's the overlap with the higher gigahertz used by the active denial technology by the military. So, you know, when I first heard of this, I was like, is this conspiracy theory nonsense or is this actually true? Just like with the satellite grid, you look it up and it's actually true, is that the wavelengths they'll be able to direct in a very specific beam-like way will overlap with the kinds that can be weaponized and used to, you know, basically specifically harm individuals. So it's not a technology any of us really want to exist.
And so it's Amazon, it's OneWeb, right? And it's Elon Musk, SpaceX. Those are the three leaders that your briefing identified. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Those are the three.
So, I mean, we need like a mass action to bring accountability to those corporations and the people that run them. Yeah.
Absolutely. In fact, that's one of the things I love about your work is that you bring the problem like into the daylight as well as the solution, because left with the information, like what do we do? And it becomes like you almost, you don't want to know the truth. So I mean, I'd like to ask you, what do we do?
Well, we are as part of this, you know, we've invested in and set up a tool for people to instantly contact their elected officials, right? So by the time this releases, we hope to have other custom contacts added. So everyone needs to do that. That's the number one thing, you know, in addition to sharing this talk, sharing the link to this conversation. That's how we grow. That's how we reach that critical threshold and move the needle. So everybody share this talk and share every talk that you're inspired by. In addition to that, send that email to your elected officials and to other respondents, and that's going to accumulate, you know, the numbers and the power, and how that message is worded is very, in a very strong way. It's respectful, but it's strong, and it's like humanity drawing a line. Right, we're coming together and we're drawing a line on informed consent, right? And really on, we have to uphold the Nuremberg Code, which says you can't experiment on people without their consent. How important is it that we hold the line on informed consent going forward, and what happens if we don't?
Exactly. It would be one thing if they've done the safety studies, you know, and they've determined there's a very known risk, and, you know, by rolling this out, you choose whether you're going to oblige or whether you're going to consent. And if you do, you should be able to be compensated if there's known harm. And so that process, I think you've worked out brilliantly with smart meters. I would love to see a similar one, you know, be applied to this situation. But I think first and foremost is people being aware that these are not theoretical harms. I mean, the design of the 5G systems will require that, what, every 5 to 10 homes, there's going to be a small, so-called small device that is basically going to be penetrating 24/7 your house, your body, the bodies of your children with this highly toxic radiation. It's really crazy.
So let's talk about censorship propaganda. Right, you have some personal experience with this, being censored, GreenMedInfo censored from Pinterest, and being shadow banned from other platforms as well. You know, what's your thoughts on just the censorship drive in general? I know that books are being banned and, you know, have already been removed from Amazon, books with natural health remedies, vaccine truth. And as well, we're seeing the New York Times propaganda piece in May of 2019 on 5G, trying to link 5G resistance with Russia, of all things. Yeah. And they're getting slammed by that, about that, by critics. And RT, the RT network, did an amazing job in rebutting that. What can you tell us about this realm of things, of the propaganda and the censorship that obviously is a main part of, you know, the other side's sort of agenda to ram all this through?
Well, it's amazing to me. I was thinking about that just recently, is that like New York Times, like a lot of these mainstream online publications require now that you pay for the propaganda. I mean, they're literally making billions of dollars with requiring logins to read their propaganda. So when it came to the New York Times piece trying to associate you know, anti-5G activism with, you know, Russia sympathizing, you know, it was clear that one of their primary funders is Verizon. And that kind of conflict of interest from an organization that's supposed to uphold journalistic integrity is absolutely absurd. And it's done out in the open now. No one's pretending. It's not hard to find that the money is fueling the propaganda. So I think that that's why alternative media has become such a force, and is why there is such a concerted effort now globally to censor platforms like ours. So, you know, what we've done is we have created a hedge against deplatforming through social media, through creating a newsletter list where it's sort of a direct link. And as well as with this summit, our intention is to help build a larger activist community with, you know, getting people to sign up for more information on 5G and ways to take action. But what we're finding is that even MailChimp and other email providers are directly linked with the very powers that be that would like to shut us up and shut us down. So MailChimp is actually a CDC Foundation partner. So, you know, and then GlaxoSmithKline, I think they signed a contract of was $700 million with Google. So we don't really necessarily have a way to evade the censorship when it comes to delivering emails to your Gmail inbox or even Google search results. So there's definitely a challenge here for us all. But my experience thus far is that people generally know what propaganda is now. They know that there are trillion-dollar industries behind all the major mainstream media outlets, and that's why they come to our site. I mean, we get a million visits a month, not without any paid traffic. It's just organic. It's people word of mouth. And that's the way this movement will continue to spread, you know, is through word of mouth and people taking really basic actions.
Have you seen evidence of like corporate agendas actually setting up, you know, policing organizations, thought police organizations to try to ensure that their net narrative is prevalent throughout the internet and to try to take down sites that are like not, like going beyond even censoring on social media? What can you tell us about what you've seen in that aspect?
Well, there's been a concerted effort for some time to associate those who question vaccine safety or the lack of safety studies with sort of like crazy anti-vaxxers, and all the way up to UNICEF and World Health Organization, who are defining the vaccine hesitant as major global health threats that are arguably killing children throughout the world. So the rhetoric has been scaling up. And so what's been happening, actually, technically, after the last election and Trump got in, even though he wasn't selected, which is generally how presidents end up gaining office, he's now rather co-opted, in my opinion. Not that he was ever someone that would be speaking for a non-corporate interest, because he's a billionaire. But the point is that after WikiLeaks released all of those DNC emails and Podesta emails, it was clear, you know, that the mainstream media needed a hedge against the release of truth, right? They needed to create a fake news campaign and discredit anyone who was diverging from the sort of mainstream narrative. So there have been many efforts. NewsGuard's an example. I mean, they have on their board former CIA individuals, etc., who are trying to create a meta layer of fact-checking. PolitiFact is another example. They were funded by the Gates Foundation, and now Facebook uses them to discredit anyone who posts or even reposts vaccine safety criticisms. So, you know, ultimately the mainstream and social media outlets are completely co-opted. I'm surprised that many of us still have a voice there. So I don't take it for granted. You know, I'm thankful we have some presence, and I'm aware that unless we build our own organic, authentic lists and platforms, there's really gonna be no place for an alternative view anymore.
Yeah, but it's so, it feels so aligned and true, the fact that, you know, you and I and an amazing group are kind of like going in that direction, right? We're intending to create community and build a list and get organized with this action, because it needs numbers and it needs commitment, it needs resolve, right? People just drawing a line and coming together.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, the beauty of it is we still have the internet, we have relative freedom of information, and while we still do, we can take action together that will profoundly amplify our success. I've seen it personally, small actions, small things that I've done have amplified thanks to social media. I mean, I was just a guy with an idea, and now Agreement Info reaches a lot of people, and I've seen that happen with so many others in this movement. You know, you don't have to be special, you just have to stand up for what's true, and every action makes a huge difference.
Yeah, thank you. We know that it's beyond any doubt that the sort of the corporate for-profit model, minus, you know, as it's been reduced in sort of humanitarian or compassion values, has become more about the bottom line, about more control, more money, that gravitates towards centralizing control and towards intentionally disempowering people, right? I mean, that's clear. Not everyone within industries, those industries, is a bad person, but the machine just gravitates toward more and more control, more and more profit in the context of competing, right? And everyone trying to one-up each other. So this is happening. How far back, in your perspective, does the war on an individual's right to direct their healing, you know, go? And the war on natural medicine, for example.
Well, I mean, I think that before the advent of pharmaceutical medicine, which arguably was, you know, late industrial revolution, you know, turn of the 20th century, that's when things really hit the fan because of being able to create proprietary patented chemical medicines. And so for our movement, that's where things really started to take a downward turn. So it has a lot to do with proprietariness, right? And I think that when it comes to individual rights, though, we still stand in a very unique time in history where just anyone can go on Instagram or, you know, create a WordPress blog. And if it's content that speaks the truth and people resonate with it, it can compete with multinational corporations. You know, it's just remarkable. So I think we need to stand strong in that awareness that we are actually really in one of the most empowered times in human history, but not be naive about it and recognize that unless we really take action, it's so easy to, you know, get sucked into Netflix or addictive foods or just the culture, and instead of taking a stand and dedicating your time to really trying to make a difference. But I think you and I have talked, Josh, that we could be activists all day long. And unless we're also good inside and we're also nurturing ourselves, taking care of ourselves, you know, it's not going to necessarily matter, because if we're just shouting, you know, like with anger at the monster out there, then we're no different ultimately than these poor folks whose agenda has run amok and they themselves just really want to find love themselves. I really do believe that. So if we really go deep down into it, there's no real enemy out there. Yes, there's systems that are designed to really destroy our health, unfortunately, and take away our freedom. But, you know, we still want to really prioritize human connection and give people the benefit of the doubt and just definitely stand up for yourself in a compassionate way.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. You know, on the summit, I also talk with Deborah Green, our teammate and our mutual friend, and she gets into this side of things beautifully and powerfully. And yeah, you and I have talked about the burnout that can happen when we're externally focused and externally stimulated and we're not, you know, paying attention, like literally giving attention to what's yes. going on inside, because that's really where the true power comes from, right? And then from that place, using intention, as Deborah says, and she has a series of, I think, six inner senses that she outlines for how we can do that. But that's really what creates lasting and effective change in the world, isn't it? Having that balance instead of, you know, going exclusively on anger or fear or panic.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's going to make the greatest difference, you know, is that if we can find a way to do this work without getting so bent out of shape that, you know, we feel we're fighting those monsters. Nietzsche said, be careful when you fight the monsters because you might become one yourself. And, you know, I think that's really true.
Before seeing this sort of inner work, compassionate focus and its necessity to be balanced, I was feeling the edge of that quote. by Nietzsche, you know? I think a lot of us have, right? It's like we're really processing fear at a deep level. And we're seeing all this awareness is coming to light. It's kind of like an existential crisis, I think, that a considerable number of humanity is in right now. And we're having to go really, really deep. How important is it that we either dissolve or rise above the artificial divides that, let's say, like industry or these agendas and their pushers have created, you know, male versus female, racial divides, you know, left versus right, Democrat, Republican, and so forth. So how important is it that we rise above that, and what can we do to do that?
Well, I know for myself, you know, so much of my activism comes from like this device here, you know, the little mini internet in my hand. So, you know, I recognize that I'm constantly trying to fight with against the very thing that I'm participating in. So I think it's important for us to find ways to support the new, you know, that will supplant the old. And that's why I'm very interested in alternative energy and technology and, you know, consciousness and meditation and all these things. They sound kind of like new agey, but yet they're really not fundamentally. You know, we are an amazing holographic entity and can connect to all parts of the planet from within as well as from without. But I think that that whole thing with intention is really important. So, you know, I don't want to be bypassy either. We have a quote fight. I mean, we're being attacked. I mean, that, there's a layer of truth there, but that type of terminology, you know, is very difficult to live with it. I don't like having to constantly think about being penetrated by radiation. Like I'm in the Miami area and the 5G networks are actually already up. My colleague has a phone and I think it's Sprint. And then we're like, wait, is this 5G on there already? So it's like, but whether we want to put our heads in the sand or not, it's happening, folks. So we do need to take a stand on this, because the default is you're going to be irradiated by this stuff regardless. So, you know, it is time to stand up.
Yeah, well said. Just as we wrap up here, is there anything else you wanted to touch on, either from your book or closing thoughts for our audience?
Well, I mean, I'm a huge advocate of looking at the body as sort of a miracle of self-regeneration. And so it really, for me, has a lot to do with my daily practices of intentional movement, you know, making sure I'm consuming raw organic food at least once a day. You know, basically taking precaution that my health is a miracle, really, when I consider what I'm being exposed to daily. The fact that I'm feeling relatively good and alive speaks to just how resilient we are. So that's the other side of it, is self-care and the balance of also supporting the types of agriculture and practices that will regenerate the biosphere. So, you know, I think that's another way to balance out this kind of awareness and activism.
Well, Sayurji, my friend, my partner in the summit, this is such a pleasure to talk with you today and to be teaming up with you to help bring this whole conversation out and help people to come into community and get empowered. And I really appreciate all the different aspects of your work and how you're really explaining on a new level, even like a quantum biophysics level in your book, this empowerment, this how we're electromagnetic beings, how we can tap in. And so the fact that, like, you know, you're out there, you're doing what you're doing in the world, we're teaming up, we're getting this summit out, there's so many people that are awakening right now and receiving the information and taking action, that speaks to the faith that we want to believe in, right? The faith of a good outcome, the faith that, you know, essentially, like, love is stronger than fear or disconnection or whatever. So you bring, I want to honor you because you bring a lot of that in your life and how you've modeled it out. So I really honor you, brother, and I just look forward to this journey with you, and thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much, Josh. It's a great honor. You're doing incredible work, and it's I'm just proud to know you and to be part of this. So thank you for making it happen.